Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And after all that, there was not a single tsunami in the season.
No, like, tsunami. Ugh. No, tsunami.
That's what I was gearing up for, that the final episode was just going to be, oh
just
my gosh,
wiped out.
Everybody's dead from the tsunami.
Oh my God, that would be so depressing. Yeah. That would
Piper, run! The waves are coming.
Piper, no, the tsunami.
Like kings and queens.
No one in the history of the world has lived as well as us.
Your southern accent's bad.
I know. I used to be good at it.
It's like not strong enough. You just have to like add more to it, I feel like. I know,
but I'm trying not to be a stereotype. I'm trying to add some real, you know.
Right, but we're trying to do Parker Posey's accent, which is insane.
Yeah. Well, White Lotus, season 3, done. We did it.
White Lotus, season 3, complete. I feel like this season, I mean, maybe we were sort of destined to get to this point. There was going to be sort of blowback or whatever. I feel like this is the first season where people have been like, oh no, this wasn't good. But I've seen such a range of opinions online. Like, I've seen people who think that this is the best season. I've seen people who think that this is the worst season. The sort of like iconic scenes from this season, I feel like I've seen people posting about how they're so good and also people posting about how they're so stupid, which I don't really think happened with the first two seasons, because I feel like it was still like building an audience, so there wasn't like the people who were out to be cool by hating on it just yet.
I agree. I think, like, we've talked about it a few different times on the podcast, and I've always been a big fan of this season, and I thought there was so much fun happening and these characters were all so engaging and interesting that I didn't really care if there was a plot or if quote-unquote nothing was happening. I know Mike White was like, said in a podcast, it's just about the vibes, y'all. Like, stop being such a pushy bottom or something.
A bossy bottom.
A bossy bottom. But, which I appreciated, because that's how I felt. But I do think I was disappointed in the finale, and it kind of left like a weird, like a bad taste in my mouth. And I've been trying to process like why exactly, like why I could have enjoyed the whole season. And then the ending felt like it just like didn't work for me. But even beyond like, oh, there's a plot hole. Oh, what was all the monkeys about? Like, it's not about like the execution. It's more how I feel like Mike White maybe isn't this, you know, all-knowing, like, in on the zeitgeist, calling out the current landscape of wealth disparity. Like, it kind of made me think, okay, yeah, no, this is just a soap opera. Like, it's just fun for him, and there's a lot of laughing at. And whereas the first two seasons, I felt like there was a really strong through line that you could pull for culture at large, and like the readings of interesting things happening. This felt more like, I don't know. It just didn't come together for me.
I thought it really worked for me. I really liked the ending. I thought it came together well. And I think that some of the points that it's hitting on are slightly different than in the first two seasons, but I felt like it executed what it was trying to say well.
What was it trying to say for you? Like, what is your take?
Well, so I think it sort of depends a little bit on the plot line. I think that the plot line with Walton Goggins and Amy Lou Wood worked well, because you sort of see that these like, especially I think straight men are so like worked up in this anger, and they don't know how to process their emotion any way other than sort of by being angry about it and following these like action hero sort of tropes. Like my dad, you know, when he gets sort of like amped up or upset, he just like watches scenes from action movies and like that sort of, and goes around the house and sort of like shouts and things, and that's really like the only way he knows how to process stuff. So mm-hmm. I think to have him have this person who like really cares about him and is there in the moment, and you know, she has that line where she's like, you know, like, what else do we need? Sort of like, you have me and I love you. And for him to kind of like throw that all away because he has to get this revenge for this father that he never met. Like, it just, to me, I felt like that tied up that storyline really well and just showed how like, yeah, if you don't sort of process your emotions, it ends up taking down lots of people and sort of for nothing. And the fact that in the end, she like, the reveal of the hotel owner being his father, like, happened sort of at a weird time and in a way that I was like, okay, like, I understand why we wanted him to shoot him first, but that was strange that he sort of like comes up to Walton Goggins at breakfast and says the thing about like, your father sucked, and then it's him. Like, so I think that
well, didn't you know that was coming?
Oh, I mean, I did, but it's like, no, it wasn't a surprise to me, but I thought like it was a little like logistically clunky of like, why would this man come up and be like, your father sucked, when he's the father, if he's not
gonna, your mom was a whore.
Right. It's like, okay. But so I thought that that plot line worked really well. And then I liked the fact that the daughter, you know, like thinks that she wants to be different from Parker Posey and, you know, like that she's rebelling or whatever. And I feel like I see this all the time with people in New York who are like, you know, these sort of nepo baby have rich parents, and it's like, they don't want to be the rich kid, but at the end of the day, they definitely don't want to be the poor kid, and they'd rather be rich and perceived as that than they would rather be poor. So I liked that plot line and how that wrapped up. And then I also liked the Belinda stuff of how, like, just how terrible money is and how greed can ruin anybody, and the fact that she basically does the same thing that Tanya did to her to the other guy who's working at the hotel, where he's, where she's like, you know, now that I have money, like, I don't need to be partnered with this guy, like, like, let me think about it. And I just thought that was such a good illustration of how like instantly money can like ruin
you.
Yeah,
but it doesn't really, like, I don't know, I just, it doesn't feel earned in the same way, because she knew this guy for like 3 seconds and she had things to take care of outside of this. So it didn't, like, yes, there was the parallel there, but it's also like, I don't know. I think in general, my feelings about the finale are more about like, does Mike White hate women? Like, I really just, I don't know. I found myself like, thinking about it outside of the literal plot, because yeah, sure, you can like say, oh, that makes sense, oh yeah, that was a, that was an interesting provocative ending, but I felt like kind of icky by it, the end of it all. And kind of the through line for me is he writes a lot of interesting women, but by the end of it, it felt really sneering and kind of condescending. And not to say women are perfect or not to say that they would behave differently, but just the way he allowed these characters to have these really interesting storylines and then just zapped them in the end, it didn't really feel satisfying. It felt really superficial in a way. Like, even the daughter, like, that whole monologue was funny, like when she's like, I could just taste it wasn't organic. Like, that's iconic. And Parker Posey being all like smug and watching her daughter sob was very funny. But I also was like, this kind of was unearned. Like, we didn't get to see that suffering, because in actuality, what seemed to bother her most about the meditation center was her brother wanting to do it too. And so I thought that would be an interesting angle of her wanting her own thing, but now that her brother was on it, she's like, oh, whatever, I'll go find something else. But instead she's like, oh, secretly, actually, no. And so I was like, well, why didn't we get more of that tension throughout the show instead of so many, you know, shots of the brothers figuring their people-pleasing tendencies out? Like, I don't know. I just felt kind of like, huh, I don't actually trust Mike White. I don't know. It kind of gave me the same sense of like Sam Levinson with what's it called?
Euphoria.
Where maybe he's gotten a little too big to really understand what was so compelling about the first season and the second season more. And this was just more splashy and loud. And the whole, I don't know, it just started to feel like he had a grudge to pick his own mommy issues or something.
Well, like, I can see the fact that, like, okay, yeah, now this man, I mean, he was always famous, like, even when he started the first series, but, like, now he's helming the largest, you know, most successful TV show on air currently. Like, how does that person really sort of do the punch up, speak truth to power kind of thing? I think it is really difficult, especially when he is, you know, the writer and showrunner and director of everything. It's not like he has a team of people, it's just him. So I think that does, you know, was sort of like bound to trickle in at some point. And I also do think that there were some moments in this that I felt, or, you know, throughout the series that I sort of felt like, okay, well, maybe that wasn't like the most well-earned thing, right, or like we could have had more on that. But I sort of attribute that to the fact that there was just so many cast members. Like, I think that maybe part of the problem with this season was that, if there was one, was that there was too many cast members and that the cast members' plots didn't interconnect enough. Like, the first season and the second season, I think, to a certain degree, it feels like you have more of these characters, like, interacting with one another, like, in between each groups. Other, where this, it felt like everybody was pretty, you know...
insular.
Yeah, with the exception of, I guess, like, the Amy Lou Wood and Patrick Schwarzenegger, sort of like the meeting of those worlds. But like the three women sort of like never met up with anybody. But I guess I sort of want to push back a little bit on the like hating women kind of thing, because I feel like the characters that he has written, like the female characters are always way more interesting than the male characters. The male characters are sort of like doing nothing most of the time. And I think that they're like way meatier, juicier roles than we've seen in a lot of other TV shows.
But look at how they end up. Like, for instance, Patrick Schwarzenegger's character is the only one who really gets to grow and learn anything. And yeah, it's sort of superficial. Who knows if it'll last? And maybe it was just to play into that trope of the speak no evil, hear no evil. Like, you know, the role reversal of these kids by the end. But I do feel like that you can write interesting women but still kind of sneer at them. And for me, I felt icky by the end because all these women were kind of like, I don't know, like, for instance, Belinda just has this about turn, which didn't really necessarily make sense for her. Not because I think she's some pure, wonderful character, but like, even within the episode, her flip-flopping on whether or not she'd take the quote blood money or not, and then pushing for 5 million, and then deciding, like, it was just like so rushed that I was sort of like, what's the issue here? And then the Amy Lee Woods character, she's just like your classic, like, I mean, yes, it's an interesting role, and I say this because I love all their pieces in it, but I felt like by the end of it, it's like, well, of course he's going to kill off Amy Lee Woods, and of course these little blondes, interchangeable, end up just putting it all under the rug to move on and settle for what they have and pretend it's all fine and decide to be joyous with one another again in the face of adversity and trauma. And I don't know, it just felt like all of the girls were shallow and they kind of get their, if not comeuppance, then sort of the last laugh is about them.
But don't you think that sort of is the case with everybody? With, like, I guess maybe the exception of Patrick Schwarzenegger?
Well, I mean, even Timothy, the dad, he gets his sort of like, you know, finally over the the homicidal hump that he was on and is like, we'll get through this together. He gets clarity. And I mean, Guy Talk and Mook, oh my gosh, she is just there to be some sort of weird power obsessed gold digger type.
That plot line I did not like in either.
Yeah.
Like, but again, I feel like these things are less, like with the Belinda thing, I think that on paper that works. I think maybe the execution of it sort of was a little rushed and could have used more time. But I think that what he is showing there is like, there are people who are like, there are good people who are sort of good because they just don't have money. And if they were given money, they would be worse versions of people, which I think is a very common thing. It's like, you can't be a horrible rich person
don't you think that is wrapped up in, like, is she a terrible person because she didn't decide to go into business with this guy she met on holiday? Like, I don't know. I think that's what he's trying to say. I think that's the parallel being drawn, but I kind of disagree with that being some sort of, oh, how the turntables, you know? Because it's like, okay, yeah, she was betrayed in a similar fashion, but this is a pretty unique circumstance in that she just took bribe from a murderer living next door. So maybe it's smart to get out of there and also like take a breath and like figure out how much taxes go on a gift of $5 million. Like, you know, it just didn't feel like that cruel of a thing for her to do, because it doesn't have to be the end of it for her, right? Like, it's like, I don't know, like I think that was the attempt, was, oh, look how quickly money corrupts. But it's also like, well, there's some special circumstances here that I'd be more curious to see play out.
Well, like, yes. I think her situation is obviously very different from Tanya's situation. But yeah. I do think it just, I don't know, sort of speaks to something that I feel like I have seen in life play out. And maybe it wasn't like perfectly executed here with her circumstances. And it made more sense like on paper as a symbolic like callback kind of thing than it did if you actually think about like the real world repercussions of her. And it's like, yeah, she doesn't live in Thailand. She obviously doesn't want to, like, she's not going to stay in Thailand, especially when this evil man is there to kill her. But but it is like, okay, you sort of made a promise to this guy, and now.
But I also push against that, because he said maybe we should go in, and she smiled and blushed. It wasn't like, oh yeah, write up a business proposal and I'll take it into advisement and we can figure it out together, which is what her storyline was at first. There was a real promise there. This was a passing conversation that honestly was a little, wow, really coming in hot there. But anyways, I'm not trying to nitpick that. I'm just trying to work through like my feelings shifting just because of this final, not just because of this final episode, but like consuming the final episode and then kind of stepping back to be like, well, yeah, Mike White is someone with a lot of fun ideas and a lot of clever, like he's a very good writer. I really enjoyed all of the every episode, but the finale kind of was like disappointing, I guess, in the most simple terms.
I mean, I guess I think season two finale like works so well, and you know, you end with like the like hookers or whatever, I guess like sort of like getting the money and walking away into the sunset, and it's like, oh, that's such a fun ending. And I do think that the season one ending is also like, there's just less people and it's sort of like tighter than this is, where, you know, you have the Alexandra Daddario character being like, oh wait, yeah, no, shoot, I do need to stick with this man because he does have money.
This murderer.
And then you have like yeah, the thing with like Jennifer Coolidge backing out of the deal, and it just like really clearly shows in all three examples, like, oh yeah, like money at the end of the day is gonna win.
Yeah,
even these people who sort of thought that they were good people, like Sydney Sweeney, it's like at the end of the day, she's gonna sell out her black friend in order to get the, in order to, yeah, you know, stick with her family. She's not gonna like bite the hand that feeds her. So I think, yeah, that this, just because it was so sprawling, the various endings didn't quite like tie, yeah, up in the same
indulgent
way.
Maybe a little more like, and I saw that criticism throughout of like, okay, what is all this? Like, there's so many shots of water and there's so many shots of like gorgeous scenery. And so it did feel kind of meandering and it worked for me, but then the rushed ending, I did feel like, oh, okay, I can see why, you know, you can't really justify it if you're not going to keep that pace in the finale and instead try to wrap everything up really rapidly without having real satisfaction, you know, because I guess we can go through each storyline, but it was all after nothing really happening, after it being purely vibes, the finale was just basically, okay, we got to close this, we got to close this, we got to close this, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, I think we're done. I feel like we could have benefited from like another episode in here.
Yeah.
Because even if you'd sort of like chopped off sort of the beginning of this episode and then sort of expanded it into a full episode, I think it would have given you more time to have some of the characters like build out at the end. Kind of their
Or it should have been edited differently. Like retroactively, I think I can see where some episodes could have been tightened to, yeah, allow for additional pieces at play. Like you said, having them interact more or something to make that final set piece, that final explosion make sense and be more gratifying. Because yeah, it was kind of like out of left field. And I mean, it was predictable in some ways, but also kind of like, I don't know, it was like flash and it's done type thing.
I ultimately sort of think that what this needed to do was cut the Belinda plotline altogether.
Yeah.
Like, I think that there was just too many plot lines and too many characters. Yeah. And so at the beginning, it took a long time to set everything up. And then even within some of these episodes, we had to spend time on all of these plots. Like, I love the family and everything sort of going on with them. I love the three girls. I think that they're super interesting. And I do think that the Amy Lou Woods, like Walton Goggin plot is interesting. Mm-hmm. I wish that like he, yeah, hadn't have been gone for so long. And then, cause I feel like that sort of ate up a bunch of time, not really getting into anything like that interesting. And then we obviously needed a plot line of the people who work at the hotel, but I sort of think that that one was also kind of weak-ish, but like you probably couldn't cut it. We would need something of that regard. But I think that the Belinda plot like was obviously there because we wanted to tie it to the previous seasons. And I just sort of felt like she really had nothing to do for most of the season. And her son, when he showed up, was like kind of annoying douchey, I thought. And then whole thing of like, is Gary going to kill somebody? Is he not? Like that ended up not really paying off very much. So I think that I think that part of the problem was just there was too many characters and that he needed to sort of cut some. And I wonder if for next season, if we'll have smaller group or if not.
I mean, no, it's such a thing now. It's like, why slow down? And it's fine if it's going to, you know, turn into something a little more soapy. And he's good at writing these weird characters that are fun for me, at least. I know it was kind of a hit or miss season for some people, but I do feel like he said he wanted Natasha back because he heard the criticism about her character in the first one. And so it's like, well, okay. But yeah, to your point, I don't think he gave her much to do other than sort of float around and wait for Greg/Gary to approach her. So yeah, it just felt like there are a lot of things happening And I don't exactly know, like, it just proves that maybe an editor, maybe a writer's room is like a useful thing, like, you know, to spitball some of these things to streamline on, because I don't think we needed 27 close-up shots of Timothy Ratcliffe taking lorazepam. Like, it's like, yeah, we get it, he's addicted to lorazepam, but maybe taking some of that out and giving it to some, you know, something, some new kernel to kind of deepen the themes would have been better. But yeah, he was clearly having a good time with what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I do think that, like, there was some fun, like, I mean, I really did enjoy this season, but I felt like there was some, like, finessing that probably could have been done. And I do think, you know, with this first season of the show, I don't know how long he was working on it, but it, you know, it was, yeah, something that probably was longer gestating. This, you know, the last season didn't come out that long ago, so he's just, you know, having to churn it out a bit more. And I think that's when you do start to notice, like, okay, not every, if we end up, you know, getting 12 seasons of The White Lotus, like, not all 12 of them are going to be incredible completely. Yeah. There's going to be some that are really great. There's going to be some that are duds, and there's going to be some that are, like, you know, sort of in between. And I feel like this is probably, like, not going to be the worst season of The White Lotus that we get, but is also, you know, I don't necessarily think the best season. Although there are pieces of it that I really love. Like, I thought that the three women the entire time were so fascinating. I loved their dynamic. I felt like it was so accurate to groups of friends that I've been a part of. And I mean, and obviously, like, with there's a certain dynamic with, like, women that I am not a part of, but I do feel like this also mimics the sort of, like, bitchy gay sort of dynamic, which I have been a part of. And I feel like they're similar in some regards. And yeah, just, like, watching these three sort of, like, be friend, quote unquote friends, but also be, like, sizing each other up and, like, kind of trying to take each other down. I also think my mom said growing up, like, you can never have a friend group of three people because there's always one person on the out. And I do feel like that is just so true in life, and you saw that in this, where it sort of, like, just rotates of, like, which of the three is sort of, like, on the outs a bit more at any given moment. But then I also sort of loved at the end, I loved Carrie Coon's speech, and I really liked it because I don't know if it's true or if it's delusion. And I feel like that is what sort of makes it so perfect. It's like, she believes this, and, you know, they're all sort of sitting there and, like, yes, like, we're so thankful for each other. We're such, like, good friends, blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm just happy to be here at the table. And on one hand, it's like, yeah, I do think that sometimes after you fight, you can kind of, like, actually come to those realizations that, like, oh, like, I'm more thankful for these people than I sort of realized that I was. But I also think that you can kind of, like, talk yourself into, like, thinking something is better than it is, especially when you're, like, getting to the end of something and it, like, benefits you to be friends with these people. You know, it's like, it benefits Carrie Coon to be friends with this famous actress, and she doesn't want to not be friends with her. And, like, I don't think she's faking that speech at the end, but it's, like, I do think there's a certain level of, like, brainwashiness sometimes where you
or, like,
can end up settling, having emotions. Yeah, like, settling, where you can end up sort of, like, having emotions and being, like, yeah, like, I am, like, I do really love you guys, and this is so great, when it's, like, eh, maybe you should have left, but, like, you know, you didn't. So,
yeah, I found the blondes really fascinating, and obviously some of my favorite moments throughout the season. All of them are excellent actors, and I think the nuance and the facial expressions and the sort of pregnant pauses and things left unsaid and said and gossiped and whatever, and it was all very interesting. And I do feel like, again, I mean, I'm happy with the ending. But I do feel kind of robbed of this moment where it would have made sense, like, because it didn't feel earned fully by that point, because the last episode ended with Carrie Coon's character having this one night stand, realizing he robbed the store and walking home drunk in the middle of the night. And so I expected something else to be there, or, you know, but then instead it was like, somehow Jacqueline had decided, oh, you know what? I do need to apologize, sort of, which would be fine too, because yeah, like, I think there's a lot of richness in female friendship and the highs and lows of it. And I appreciate that that's something that's curious to him, because I think it is very fascinating. And a lot of people react to this friendship, like the reactions to it are very, you know, wide and far-ranging. Some people found them super toxic. Some people found them super relatable. Some people were like, this is exactly how I am with my sister. Like, and I like that. I like that it's not one size fits all sort of look at womanhood and friendship. But to skip to the dinner and have both of the other women just absolutely pretending nothing happened, and then Carrie Coon being like, okay, well, I'm going to give this moment. I don't know. I feel like it's funny. It's like a generational divide or something, because I've seen so many like motherhood blogs or kind of like Instagram accounts quoting this speech as like, oh yes, like feel it in my bones. Like we might fight, but we'll get over it. And like we overcome because life matters so much. And as you get older, you just realize the bullshit doesn't. And I was like, I don't think... like, that's not how I read it. I read it as very much this woman who's very unhappy, and she's been unhappy with her job, her life, her ex or whatever, and she can't afford to lose one more thing. And so she's like, whatever, I'll take my seat at this table. Like, I'm fine. Like, this is all I get. It's fine. Your little glowy scraps, like, I'll take it. And it's kind of sad, and it's kind of, you know, pathetic is kind of a mean word, but you know, like it didn't feel like female love conquers all. It felt very like, yeah, I'm gonna just settle for this. Like it's fine. I don't have anything else. Like I can't afford to lose this one more thing.
I wish that there had been another scene before the dinner where she kind of had her this realization somehow or another and then had given the speech. I do think, yeah, like sort of with all of this stuff in the finale, like we needed another episode in there to kind of like get us to the final point. But I think that I sort of think that's the beauty of this speech and how well that it's written, that it is sort of like, is this a good thing or is this a bad thing? And we kind of don't know. And you don't know if it's a good thing for her or sort of like where her head is at. Because I feel like when I initially watched it, I did think of it more like, you know, the mommy bloggers or whatever. And then sort of the more I thought about it, I was like, wait, no, I think this is actually kind of like sad.
Well, I think it's similar to the character in the first season who goes back to her rich husband.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I could probably work and struggle and make something better and cut this out of my life and be a little happier, but I don't know if it's worth it. So like, let's just settle in. And I think a lot about Carrie Coon's like first episode when she leaves the group and just sobs, like, you know, like just a surprise, like guttural sob as she looks at them. And I think that's like a very potent and like powerful sort of person to sit with. But yeah, I think the sort of yesification of it is going to be interesting.
I also did think that it was just so well done that she was the one from New York, because I feel like people from New York like to think like, yes, like we're better than everybody else. We're tougher. We've got to figure it out. Like, I would not want to give up sort of like the difficulties of this city to go live in some suburb someplace and be like bored and deluded and live this like cookie cutter life. Like, ugh, that seems terrible. But I do think that there is also a part when you sort of bump up against. Like, it's easy when you're in the city and you're with other city people to look at the outside world and be like, yeah, that sounds terrible. But then sort of sometimes when you bump into it, it is like, well, wait a second, they have all of this space.
It seems nice. Cheaper, yeah.
And it's nice and there's nature. And sure, like, not that I'm much glad goes you have on, a beautiful like, face. You know, and I think that, and I loved that it's like you could tell that she is working through that, where she thinks that, okay, the woman who lives in LA is vapid, and she thinks that the woman who lives in Texas is a Republican and, you know, sort of isn't, like, doesn't have good morals, and she judges them for that. But then at the same time, it's like, but she does want to be pretty, and she does want to sort of belong in an organized religion community that is, you know, sort of like safe, where she doesn't have to worry about things and she doesn't have to constantly be like fighting for stuff. And I thought that was so well constructed, the whole thing. I was just mesmerized by it. And that scene at the dinner table where they are talking, where they realize Leslie Bibb is a Republican, I think is like maybe the best scene of the entire three seasons. Yeah. Like, it's so well done.
Yeah, no, they're all supreme, and it's going to be tough to see who they even put up for Emmys. But I do feel like it kind of like fizzled when it cut to the montage of them giggling in each other's, like, I don't know, in each other's arms. And then on top of that, the ending itself, the literal, there has just been a gunfight and four people are dead floating in the water here, but we're still gonna have this really breezy farewell. Like, that was sort of like, I'm sorry, I don't buy that. And I feel like there could have been more fun to have that sort of stressed, panicked pack, like, let's get out of here, what the fuck is going on, fight with the management for putting them through this, like, you know, like, I was like, I felt like there, especially with a personality like a star, like a movie star, there would have been more of a scene about what she was entitled to or what had happened, and even just the trauma of it. I feel like they would have been more emotional than just like breezy smiley on the boat ride back to the mainland, like. And so that kind of confused me too. I was sort of like, in what scenario is this how the hotel moves forward? Like, a couple families leave? Like, no, I think a lot of people would have to leave. It's an active crime scene. Like, I don't know. This isn't like the second one where people died off site, or the first one where it's one worker who was trolling another, you know, person's room. This is a literal mass shooting. Like, it's done. Like, you gotta call it, you know?
Yeah, the fact that they were there and present during the shooting and had, like, flee, I felt like that, like, I could see the Ratliffs sort of, like, not being that phased by any of it, because they're like, what? Yeah. Someone was shot? Oh my gosh, we gotta go home. But the fact that they were there and, like, sprinting away and then sort of being easy breezy so about it, I did feel like, but again, I'm sort of like, I think we needed less characters and a little bit more time. Like, we needed an extra episode and we needed to cut some people.
Or cut the, like, we'll be together forever, baby, as he, like, goes to kill himself or to be shot by death by cop or whatever his plan was.
See, I really loved the the end of that, because I felt like this is just, it's so masculine to have, like, fucked up this whole thing and then to still be like, but actually we're still gonna be together, like, this is true. It's like, no, this woman killed, like, you got this woman killed, you got killed for no reason, like, nobody gave two shits about the dad that you never even met, and yet you're going on this whole revenge theme because you can't deal with your own emotions. But then even once you've royally screwed up and have sort of, like, been stared down in the face with that, you still come up with some sort of bullshit reasoning why actually this was a good idea and you're like very heroic for
it's
doing
all gonna
it.
Be okay, like,
the whole, that whole, like, the Walton Goggins plot line, I feel like this season has been like, I like Amy Lou Wood and I like that she got sort of, like, dragged in with the family, because I thought that all worked really well. I felt like Walton Goggins, like, we just sort of had to wait and wait and wait for him to finally, like, meet the man. And then we didn't really even see that interaction. And then, you know, so it's like, I don't think he, I mean, we did, but, like, not, you were sort of like, what? Yeah, like what happened? Like, so I wanted, I felt like his character was sort of uninteresting for most of it.
Yeah.
But then I did really like sort of the, you know, payoff, I guess, at the end. And I felt like that did sort of work with how boring his character was the whole season. Cause it's like, oh yeah, like he's got nothing else going on in his life. He can't process anything. He's been so consumed by this revenge that it's eaten up every other part of his soul. And I also felt like I have seen so many of my friends who are women who are like Amy Lou Wood, who it's like, oh, this is such an interesting, fascinating, like lovely, intelligent person who for whatever reason is obsessed with this terrible man and is like truly in love with him in a way that you're like, what are you doing, girl? Like, this makes zero sense and is going to end in your demise, but here you go with it. So I really liked how that plot line worked, I felt like, in the end, and sort of what it was saying about, you know, people like the Walton Goggins character, who I feel like I knew about 900 of growing up. So
no, for sure. I was fine with that sort of Greek tragedy layup. Like, I obviously, it was so clear it was his dad. No one dared to ask a follow-up question of like, how did your mom know this? What do you mean? On her deathbed? And I loved that he was so dumb. And he's also a bad guy. He ruined his friend's sobriety just for this dumb, like, fake out. Doesn't even give him the background he needs to play the director pitching this role. And that's a bad friend, okay?
Oh, yeah. It's not
worst friend on the show, even with the girls there. And then for him to be like, yeah, I'm happy with you, Amy Lee. Thank you so much. You saved me. You did it. But it did get kind of heavy handed with her being like, what is going to happen is going to happen. And I love you. And you gave me everything you want. Like, it was like she was the reddest of red herrings. But then it turned out actually everything she predicted happened.
Yeah.
Like, oh, bad things come in threes. Like, I'm really scared. Like, you know. So I felt like something could have been trimmed there just to help streamline it, because, yeah, that story was pretty obvious. It was pretty guaranteed. And I don't know, maybe it was also partly the hype around this was everyone was like, oh, this is the craziest ending. Like, this is absolutely wild, this ending. And if they'd gone through with killing the little boy, then maybe I would have agreed. But it did feel like a fake out in a lot of ways. Like, a lot of the stories that were set up to be explosive ended up being, oh, okay. Like, the blondes, you know, Belinda doesn't get killed. She gets her $5 million. And then, yeah, the Lachlans. Wow.
Yeah.
Teenage boys are gross. That's the main
thing. I did want him to die. Like, I was like, oh, if he dies, like, that would have been a better ending, I think, to that story. But I do also realize, like, that would have been, like, very sort of depressing in a sort of obliterating way to that family, in that, like, they already have the money thing that they're dealing with, but then they also are now going to be, like, losing the child. So it's like, I can sort of see why they didn't kill him, but I was also like, okay, if you're gonna do it, like, do it, don't half do it. I like,
and then if it's a fake out, give us Parker Posey's reaction to seeing her son die.
Right.
Like, you know, that's what I want. That's what I needed. I needed the family to stumble upon him.
Because then it's also like, I did want, either like someone to fit, like, one of the other family members to figure out what the dad did with regarding, like, the poison, or figure out what the dad did with the money. The fact that we didn't get to see that at all, or, like, we didn't even get a reaction of sort of like, and then, like, you know, cut. We just got to the end, and it's like, wait, we've been waiting since literally the first episode for this family to find out that they have no money anymore. And we still don't get the, like, wait, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
moment. So that was a little disappointing. I feel like of the plot lines, like this one was a lot of fun and probably the most engaging, I think, throughout the season, because there's a lot of different ups and downs with the various family members. But yeah, the ending, I was sort of like, okay, I didn't necessarily feel like this all came together. And even with the two brothers, of like the one being like, hey, I'm just like a people pleaser, was sort of like, okay, like that seems weird to me. Like, I understand you were on
there
drugs,
would be follow-up questions,
what was going on, but I was like, that seems odd. And then I did sort of like the fact that like having your brother jerk you off is so like such a terrifying thought, that it did sort of like scare Patrick Schwarzenegger straight, where he's like, you know what, no, never mind, I want to stop being a womanizer. But I also didn't necessarily think that like that like,
well, because they tried to make it about Amy Lee being this such a desirable vacation hookup for him that he'd change his whole life and actually read a book for her after starting the season saying like books schmucks. And so yeah, they seem to not know what to do with the brothers after the incest plotline. And I felt like that was kind of curious too, because the eldest got a lot of screen time. One, because of the Amy Lee thing that didn't really need to be anywhere. But it was like I kept expecting something, or him to finally be a good big brother and be like, sorry for being such a pill, but that wasn't cool, bro, you know. But instead he's like, you have to be your own man. You have to make your own smoothies, dude. And then cut to, he decides to use a dirty blender to do one. And yeah, I think there could have been a lot more fun moments for them to sort of confront what happened and what it means. But instead it was all like implied and just like insulated to themselves. And yeah, and then the girl's storyline was just so quickly over and done with, and she was immediately hotter and wearing better clothes and giving in, which is a funny concept and a satisfying conclusion for this, you know, spoiled little rich girl. But it did feel kind of like too little too late in the end.
Yeah, that was a little rushed. I wish that they had spent a little more time with that. I feel like if we're going to talk about a group of people who like Mike White hates rather than women necessarily, I'm like, all three of the seasons have had very strange like gay sex dynamics in them. And I'm like, I don't know what that necessarily says about Mike White. Yeah. But in the first season, you have the motel guy like eating out the like worker's ass. Mm-hmm. And then in the second season, you have
and
the, like,
it's
nephew,
like the dad's supposedly obsessed with his dad dying from AIDS.
Oh yeah, yes, the gay dad. Yeah. Grandpa was a power bottom. And then the second season, yeah, you have the like uncle or the nephew who's like fucking the uncle on the cruise ship, and then the, like, these gays are trying to murder me. And then in this season, there's not any gay people, I don't think, but then you do have the like brother incest kind of thing. Sam Rockwell's weird sort of like I want to be the Asian woman sort of monologue. Like I feel like that there's just like for gay people, sex is a lot less taboo. So I do feel like the gay people are more sexual. And if you just look at the responses from gay people on Twitter to all of these things, it is like, yeah, they're, you know, gay people are going to do weird, random, like sort of inappropriate things regarding sex. But Mike White doesn't necessarily give me that sort of energy.
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit more, I don't know, like judgmental of some regard, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It's if it was just in one of the seasons or even just in two of the seasons, I think it would be like, oh, okay, like this is just sort of like an interesting plot point. But the fact that it's now cropped up multiple times is a little bit like, what are you trying to say, or what is sort of like lurking in your subconscious that is coming out that you sort of don't know how to deal with?
Well, yeah, I think that's part of it too, is that that's what I mean when I'm like, maybe I don't trust Mike White like in the same way, you know, like I can't give him the same I don't know, blind faith that he's having a good time talking about things I agree with. Whereas some of these, yeah, I heard he cut a non-binary character because he didn't want them to get, you know, attacked by the Trump administration or something. And then, yeah, he was on this podcast just this week, this really like alt-right adjacent, very, this like racist podcast from this guy. And they talked about Sam Rockwell's monologue, and the podcast host like cited this really transphobic pseudoscience theory, saying that, you know, all transgender men are just people who, you know, want to have sex, like just like a very offensive, transphobic, yeah, problematic idea. He named that, and then both of them kind of laughed about it, and he's like, yeah, you know, it's funny you picked up on that, like blah blah blah. And so it was kind of like, oh, like first of all, why are you on this podcast, and second of all, what are you talking about? And like listening to clips of him, he's not very eloquent, he's not very, you know, capable of stringing together his thoughts or themes. I think he's just, like he said, he wanted to vibe. And so for him, there is a lot of humor, but maybe it is more sneering and condescending and less about, wow, aren't the rich awful, and more like, these are the kind of people that I hate and judge and find disgustingly fascinating, and I'll just sit here and mock them for my own sake for 8 hours.
I will say that I looked at both of those sort of instances, both the thing about the trans people and the non-binary kid.
Yeah.
And I feel like the non-binary thing was, it was just supposed to be like sort of a passing, it wasn't like a character that got removed. It was just like a passing remark that the daughter or that Carrie Coon made. And Mike White was sort of like, I felt like this, we either needed to have like more about this and make it a more serious plot line, which we didn't have, or it needed to be cut in this, you know, certain like current climate. Like I didn't handle it well enough in the script. So that I was kind of like, okay, like I can see that in some regards. It's not like with Disney where, you know, they're like cutting gay people because they aren't going to get distributed in China or whatnot. The other thing I found very confusing, it was weird that he was on that podcast to begin with, but then I was sort of like, you know, I'm involved in sort of these press junkets and stuff, and lots of times it's like, I think that the people getting interviewed have no idea who they're talking to. Like, they are passed, you know, through dozens of different press sites and all kinds of things. So I don't necessarily know if Mike White even
doesn't do a lot of podcasts. So it's not like he's on every podcast talking about this show.
No, but I just imagine that he's like extremely busy and other people are sort of like, his team maybe should have vetted this more for him. But I feel like, I don't know how much the actual celebrities are like looking through who they're, you know, if somebody's like, oh, here's this podcaster, Joe Schmo, he has 500,000 followers, can you go on the episode for 15 minutes? Like, I'm not sure how much he's checking. Anyways, I found the whole thing about the trans people like very confusing, because it doesn't seem to me like that Mike White would be like a TERF. Like that, I don't know, that seems like a sort of...
It seems hard to imagine anyone would be, but alas.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, yeah. So I was kind of, and the interview section I found like confusing enough that I was sort of like, I don't know if I'm like fully understanding what's going on here when I was listening to it. But
how can we really know? It just feels, yeah, it seems like there's dominoes stacking up now that maybe paint like a less woke picture than put on. And I think that's true in the audience too.
Picture.
Yeah. And I think it's like a lot of people see this show as mocking that like liberal left, like purist, like I'm better than you type of I don't know, neoliberalism. But yeah, I mean, to hear him talk about like, oh yeah, there's two genders. Like, it's just like the way we have sex. It's just around these two genders. Like, what are we really like, yeah, it's not really great to hear him and to hear him stumble through this without any real thought or care. It's sort of like, well, why am I trusting you to put thought and care into this TV show that you single-handedly are responsible for? And that was positioned as like, not just fun, not just, you know, camp, but like, yeah, like a show with a message or at least themes that are relevant to today's, you know, trying times. But so, yeah, it just felt like in the end, all the fun parts, all the like jokes, all the clever quips maybe had less to do with getting to a final place and more that they were just funny in that moment. And, you know, that was what Mike White wanted to highlight, was just the vibes of a good vacation. And I think too, this season being so wrapped up in consumerism, like all these White Lotus, like what is it called? Like away luggage doing a White Lotus thing, and all these hotels offering White Lotus packages. It's like, oh, okay. So we've just completely, like Belinda, money corrupts. And so now we're all hungry, grubby, take whatever, doesn't matter what about it. So I don't know. It just kind of was like, oh man, kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. And I wish it had been more satisfying or eviscerating maybe in the way earlier seasons were. But this just felt more like, wasn't that fun? Now we're going back home and we'll see what happens. But until the next time.
I mean, I will say that the brand deals, I'm fairly confident, have nothing to do with like the creative. Like, I'm sure that whenever Mike White signed, like, you know, like without any power, signed up to do the first season, that he gave the merchandising rights and stuff to HBO. So I think that they could do whatever the hell they want with that. Sure. And it doesn't really have anything to do with the show. But no, I think that it will be interesting to see where season four goes. And if
I mean, what millionaire is going to the White Lotus after a shootout at one of their locations shortly after a mass bodies rolling up on the beach?
I think you fail to realize how like little people care and pay attention. I mean, like all of these plane crashes that have gone on, and it's like, is anyone taking that into consideration when flying? I don't think so. If somebody got shot, if somebody got shot at like the Best Western someplace, I wouldn't be like, oh, can't go to a Best Western again. I mean, I do think it's a little bit ridiculous that now there's three White Lotuses where people have been killed.
Exactly. But someone on Reddit is connecting those dots. You know, the New York Times is picking up on that story. But yeah.
Well, we'll have to wait. They haven't announced where the fourth season is. I assume that will happen somewhat soon, and then we'll start getting the cast announcements trickling out. But this was a fun season to watch. I'm glad that we got the chit-chat about it. And next week, we'll be talking about another beloved series, The Hunger Games.
Yes.
I have not started the book yet, but I will be reading it this weekend.
It's a fast read. It's shorter than
The Ballad of the Songbirds and Snakes or whatever.
But I did want to ask, rapid fire. Oh, yeah. So, who do you think is getting the Emmy?
I think that the Emmys are going to... I honestly think Walton Goggins could get it. I think it'll be either Walton Goggins or Patrick Schwarzenegger on the men's side of things. And on the women's side of things, I think it's either going to be Carrie Coon or Parker Posey.
Yeah.
I think that a whole bunch of them are going to get nominations. Yeah, I think Leslie Bibb's getting a nomination. I think Amy Lou Wood's getting a nomination. I think Jason Isaacs could get a nomination. I think the little brother could get a nomination. Like, I think a lot of people are going to get nominations. Yeah. But I think that, I think it's either going to be Parker Posey or Carrie Coon who's going to win the Best Supporting. Because the annoying thing with this show is that everybody goes supporting. So it's not like they have lead, and it's not like they can win four Emmys. They can only get two.
I think Carrie Coon's is better, but Parker Posey deserves it.
I think the question will be a little bit of like, Carrie Coon has been good on a whole bunch of TV shows and hasn't really gotten an Emmy. So I could see people being like, well, we loved her on The Gilded Age and we loved her on The Leftovers. Let's, you know, so, and we also loved her on this, like, it's time. Whereas Parker Posey, I think, has done less TV as of late.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if Parker Posey already has an Emmy. I'm pretty sure Carrie Coon does not. So that could also play in. Yeah. But I have to run, so I will let you go. But thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will be back next week. Bye.